The following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.
The Force is strong with us, and we hope it is strong with you. Welcome to another edition of the New Jedi Archives with Zach Hagenbusher and Ben Schultz.
Hello, Zach.
Why, hello, Ben.
How are you today?
I'm doing okay. There's a stranger in the room. Not a stranger to you.
Well, no, he's still strange.
A relative stranger to me. That's fine. We're going to get to know each other pretty well. Matt Fazette. How's it going, man?
Good. Great. Still alive, so it gets worse.
Wow. What an attitude to have on life.
Works.
It does work.
It's kept me alive thus far.
There we go. So you're a Star Wars fan, I take it.
I am a Star Wars fan. Okay. I actually had to actively try to not wear Star Wars clothing today.
Well, I failed at that. I'm wearing a BB-8 shirt.
So. For me, wearing a Star Wars shirt today would be like wearing the T-shirt of the band you're going to see.
Sure. But
you're
I do that too.
Like the band wearing their own shirt at this point, which...
I do that too. I don't care. I'm shameless. Why? Why should I be ashamed that I like the band? Why should I be ashamed that I like Star Wars?
Well, it's apparent you like the band. You bought the ticket.
Sure.
We're all in the same room here. We obviously know we like the same band.
You didn't need to wear that shirt.
Right.
Fair point. Well, today, Matt has joined us to talk a little bit about Star Wars Rebels.
Is this part where I clap?
And you can if you want.
The lone person
I'm just clapping. I'm just clapping.
The sound of one hand clapping.
It's a fantastic show, obviously. And Ben and I enjoy it very much. Matt, what do you think of Star Wars Rebels overall? It's almost over as of the time of this recording.
Overall, I like it. I like the animation style more than Clone Wars. I like the character models. I like the story arcs.
More than the... because the style is very similar to the Cartoon Network Clone Wars.
It's similar, but not the same.
No, it isn't.
The depth of field is much, much different.
We talked about that during our first season recap. That yeah, the look is a lot different. There aren't as many like hard edges.
Yes, right.
It's a little softer in its look. And in the second season, you know, they took those assets that they created in the first season, and they were able to add more details and more depth to them.
And I know it's a nitpicky thing, but character depth, you can portray a lot through your animation style and your base drawings of the character. And I just feel like they have more character, personality, you know, the subtle differences in facial cues and facial tics are more prevalent to me, I guess.
Absolutely. We're talking about season two of the show. I think when we talked about season one, it would have been back in August or September. So it's been a while. We've taken some time. But we're returning to Rebels with a season two recap. Now, for season one, we picked our five favorite episodes from that season. And in no particular order. I guess we're going to go at them chronologically, you know. But you could really put any of these at like one or two or three. We're not going to try and do that. These are just our five highlight episodes from the season. Of course, the beginning of the season, the Siege of Lothal. The crew is stuck on Lothal. They have to try and find a way off the planet. It's in this episode that they join the larger rebellion formally. They've already met Ahsoka. We met her at the end of last season, so we know that she was Fulcrum the whole time and that she was helping them organize this. And they on their way off the planet, they try to, Minister Tua, who at this point had been a villainous character, or a villain to them, you know, a villain on the show, minor villain. She gets a hold of them and says, look, I think that I'm in hot water here. I feel like they might kill me if I don't get the job done, and I'm just not comfortable with what's going on, so I can give you information on the Empire, I want to defect. And, of course, Darth Vader is aware of her treasonous plans, and he happens to be on Lothal to deal with these rebels himself. So he meets them on the platform as they're trying to escape. He orchestrates the death of Tua when she's entering a shuttle and it explodes. And then he fights Kanan and Ezra on the platform. They're able to escape with their lives just barely. But what did you think of Darth Vader in Star Wars Rebels? I thought they captured him very, very well.
I was impressed with Vader's plan. I was not impressed that Tua did not see it coming. He flat out tells her, then you need to find something to entice them back. He tells her exactly what he's going to do. But I mean, he doesn't tell her he's going to kill her to do it, but...
Right, but when you're talking about Darth Vader, I mean, the presence of fear around him, right? The intimidation, just being near him must be like for other people. When he tells you to do something, I think part of your brain just goes, I have to do exactly what he said, right? Because it's just a, just being near him has to be almost terror, except for the idiot, yeah, except for some people. But for someone in this rank, for Vader to say something, you just all of a sudden go mind blind and get tunnel vision and, okay, I'll just do that.
And then let me get out of here.
Yes, yeah.
So here's the one nitpick I had with this episode.
Sure.
Is Tarkin not a Moff yet?
Well, okay, wait, before we go much further to finish out like the big points of the episode.
Okay.
As they're trying to escape the planet, Vader single in a his fighter winds up taking on, you know, a good chunk of the rebel fleet himself. And dispatches of a couple fighter squadrons, and I apologize because I think Ben has seen this more recently than I have. I know that they're able to escape. They don't, you know, shoot him down or defeat him or anything. But he winds up targeting the ghost, and he feels Ahsoka's presence on the ship, and that's when it's confirmed. You know, and she feels his, and that starts the chain of events. You know, for her to realize that her master is not dead.
I think maybe Darth Vader should just turn down the volume on his presence and he'd get a lot more stuff done.
See, I don't know if that's a... The only Force user that we've seen on screen that has been able to, like, turn down the volume... Well, I guess there's two. Emperor Palpatine, because mm-hmm. he can stand around a bunch of Jedi and nobody can figure out that he's a Sith.
Right.
And Luke, because Luke was able to close himself off from the Force completely.
Right.
But other than those two, it seems like most of the Force users really aren't too concerned with their, you know, this is my presence here.
So what happened to Anakin in the meantime?
What do you mean?
Well, because just a movie and a half ago, he could be sitting right next to Yoda and Obi-Wan and they couldn't sense shit about shit.
Well, no, his presence is still there. We're not talking about his intentions. We're talking about his presence.
I'm not necessarily talking about his intentions either. I'm just it's always been a sticking point for me that Obi-Wan can sense Alderaan being destroyed halfway across the galaxy, but...
He can't sense Anakin's inner turmoil sitting right next to him? That's a good point. I mean, I can't answer that question.
Well, I just mean because his presence is so great. And his, you know, you talked about the fear, you talk about Ahsoka sensing it, but ostensibly, Darth Vader is less powerful in the Force than Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
He has less midichlorians.
I would say less powerful in the Force overall, but more physically powerful and more dangerous.
Well, right. There's still an intimidation factor.
Yeah.
I get that. I would be shitting myself if Darth Vader walked in and threatened me.
I think he's using what he has more efficiently and more powerfully as Darth Vader than using what he had as Anakin Skywalker. He could stack more rocks as Vader than he could as Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
Okay.
I think you've got a point, because with experience comes mastery, essentially. I'm not saying he's a master of the Force, but you could, I mean, I would, at this stage, you probably could call him that, because he's had to deal with his, I mean, for lack of a better term, disability. You know, how should I say this? you're right, Ben. He naturally, he doesn't have as much potential, right? Like peak Anakin, peak physical Anakin has more potential
right.
than Darth Vader. But peak Anakin, I don't think is as powerful as Darth Vader winds up becoming.
Right? I'm just saying, if you're talking about something that's a passive thing, like your force presence, ostensibly Anakin, who had more force potential, would have more passive presence than Darth Vader, who has less space aids because he has less place for them to be.
Right.
Sure. I never really thought about it as less space aids being the reason why he's less powerful. I think it's just, I don't know, I've always heard it, I've heard it explained a couple different ways, not in canon, obviously, but that his lack of actual physical limbs prevents him from doing as much with the Force as he maybe could have before. Like, for example, Force lightning obviously affects him
well, actually,
very
that,
differently.
Again, not in canon, but Matt pointed this out to me. The reason he can't Force lightning is because his suit is actually designed as a superconductor for Force lightning.
Oh, sure.
So that right. the Emperor can bitch slap him at will.
Yeah, it was Palpatine's failsafe. I'm going to put you back together, but I have the self-destruct button in my hand.
Now, to go back to your question before, Ben, about okay. Grand Moff Tarkin, he's a Grand Moff at this point.
Because they keep referring to him as Governor Turk.
Well, it's you can swap it. It's not a big deal. I remember...
But Tua is also a governor. Is she also a Grand Moff?
She's a minister.
Oh, she's minister.
No, you're thinking of Governor Price.
Okay. And is Governor Price also a Grand Moff?
No, but Tarkin was a governor of his territory.
Well,
so people have referred to him as governor, but his proper title is Grand Moff, but it's interchangeable because Leia calls him Governor Tarkin in A New Hope. And he's obviously a Grand
Correct.
Moff.
Correct. I think they use the terms, if you knew me before I had this title, right? If okay. we're close, you can call me Governor Tarkin, or if you knew of me before this, you call me Governor Tarkin. But if you're just some idiot coming off the street and you don't know who I am, you better use Grand Moff.
Well, because technically Grand Moff means governor of a quadrant, Moff is governor of a sector, and governor is governor of a planet.
So in theory, governor, I mean, if you're a Grand Moff and you're the governor of a sector, then aren't you technically still a governor?
Well, sure.
There we go. Problem solved.
Again, I think it's just the honorific. How much credit do you want to give this person? So for Leia to come in and say, governor, I'm totally ignoring.
Slight.
Yes, that's a slap in the face.
Brothers of the Broken Horn is the next episode that we felt was worth highlighting as one of our top five. This is the first appearance of none other than Hondo Ohnaka in Star Wars Rebels. And if you remember, he is the slimy... He used to be the leader of a gang in the era of the Clone Wars, and now he's just an old dude.
He's a close friend of Obi-Wan.
Yes, he slums around the galaxy trying to swindle people and pull things off, but he used to have a crew, and now he doesn't. When we come across him in this episode, Ezra actually stumbles across him while he's trying to basically steal Visago's ship and Visago's army of droid servants. And he doesn't exactly get away with that, but he is able to convince Ezra that these things are his for a while. And then Ezra kind of helps him gain some treasure. He doesn't get to keep the treasure at the end, but Ezra and Hondo actually form a little bit of a bond, a little bit of a friendship. And
you mean a close friend of Obi-Wan's convinced someone from their point of view to do something that probably wasn't right?
Yes.
Okay, so he learned a lot from Obi-Wan.
Yes, got clearly.
It. Got it.
Or Obi-Wan learned a lot from him.
Yep.
But that is something to note. So Obi-Wan, when you think of him, like I think it's a great example you actually gave in the last time we talked about Rebels, Ben. You said, Obi-Wan could never be, you wouldn't think Obi-Wan would be Lando's friend. Or maybe that wasn't the Rebels episode, but you've said that before. Like, when you watched the original trilogy as a kid, you never would think that Obi-Wan would be Lando's friend. But here we are with Obi-Wan, we now know, was friendly or worked together with Hondo quite well. Now we're seeing Ezra do the same thing. Do you think it was kind of perfect timing that Ezra was the one who stumbled across him and not, for example, Kanan or Ahsoka?
So you mean, is it perfect that another not very good Jedi shows up and that's could be friend Hondo?
I suppose.
I think that it shows that a lot of characters in the Star Wars universe are more willing to be a ends justify the means kind of person.
Yeah, they're... Right?
Jedi are not above the ends justify the means. They're supposed to be. They want us to believe that they are, right? I'm always going to take the honorific. I'm always going to be righteous and on the side of the light. But really, when it comes down to it, they're just as willing to do some less than honorific things to get to the ends of what they want.
And to be fair, Ezra is just barely a Jedi.
Of course, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yes,
I mean,
yes.
You could maybe, you, I don't even know if
that's,
you can,
probably
call
why
him
he's still likable.
I'm actually throwing more blame at Obi-Wan here than Ezra.
Sure.
Obi-Wan's had lot o' time as a Jedi and, well, in fancy temple and robes.
The Jedi have always been a more do as we say and not as we do kind of group.
No.
What? Well, to be fair, they've always been that way on screen that we've seen. Who knows?
If it's off screen and we haven't seen it, is there canon Jedi?
Well, no. I'm saying that, like, it's possible that the Order started as something different.
Well, I'm sure the Order started as something different and actually decent. Well, and
yeah,
then people got involved.
Yeah.
Right.
People will screw any good idea up.
Another highlight episode for the season, Homecoming. Hera winds up having to go back home, and she winds up running into her father, who, again, another character from the Clone Wars. And I believe his name is, now I can't remember his name.
That would be a dumb thing to name your child.
Oh, look at my new son. Oh,
what's his full name? I can't remember his name.
This is my son, Disappointment. We just call him,
okay. Man, I love that you guys are so forgiving to me. It's just great.
Cham?
Ben didn't
Cham! Cham Syndulla. That's right. And he was a freedom fighter during the Clone Wars, trying to liberate his planet from the separatists.
Ryloth. Bingo.
And I guess you can see where Hera got it from, in a way. You know, her this is her fight. It's interesting, though, because her father doesn't necessarily... He doesn't exactly support her fight. He doesn't support the rebellion in the same way that he kind of...
He's a Twi'lek, freedom fighter. He doesn't give a shit about the greater rebellion.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I think he would rather Hera be home.
Yeah. We have problems here. Let's solve our problems here before we start thinking about the galaxy as a whole.
Sure, but she can't do that. But it's kind of interesting because she has this, the Twi'leks have this accent. It's almost like, you can't really place it. It's like mildly French or something. And she obviously does not. But when she's around her father enough, there is like a couple of lines of dialogue where you hear that accent.
She picks it up
through
a little bit.
Right. It's like whenever my mom is out east, you know, she's kind of lost her East Coast accent, but when she's home, no, it's definitely
comes
there.
Right back.
So yeah. I thought that was a really cool touch.
Zach's mom used to live where they filmed the balcony scene in episode 2.
That's not true.
I'm bringing that back just for you, Joey, if you're listening.
Don't do that.
That's not true.
That's impossible.
We also get to see the Y-Wing that Hera salvaged Chopper from.
Right. Yep, that crashed on the planet. And I'm sorry.
Do you think with Hera not being able to join her and forget the Greater Rebellion, is that kind of I've seen behind the curtain, now I can't unsee it? I can't just forget about the greater fight now. I'm part of something bigger. I can't be part of something smaller.
Well, it's interesting because in the book A New Dawn, she's actually got this idea herself. And then she comes across Kanan. And at first she says, no, he's not worthy to be even a part of my fight. Sure. And I would never want him to be. But he can come along for now and I'll use him for whatever I need. And then I'll ditch him when the time is right.
So
you're saying Hera would have been a Jedi if she was born?
I was inhaling to say it. I was inhaling to say it.
Sure. But I think it could be a little bit of that, too. You know, she's a very interesting character. She's put a lot of personal things aside for what she has seen as the ultimate greater good. And I think it also could be a little bit of... Not everybody is meant for the family business.
Right.
Right? I mean, if your dad owns an auto dealership... you may be a, maybe you are a great salesman, but you don't want to sell cars. You want to sell something else, you know? Right. So I think it's, she sees her skills being used on a grander field, and that's just kind of how it is.
Well, and isn't it a kind of waste of her skills to fight the little fight? If the rebellion wins and they defeat the Empire, Ryloth is free.
Right.
So you want to win the battle or do you want to win the war? It's going to take this, it's going to take X amount of effort on my part.
She's seeing the forest through the trees.
Right.
Her this fight is a tree and she's trying to look at the forest as a whole.
Exactly.
Right. And one more cool or interesting part of that episode is that we see Kanan interact with Cham. And he's very clearly trying to impress him.
Right.
It's Hera's dad.
Right. It's Hera's dad. And obviously he has, I don't know if he has a different view of their relationship at this point, but he certainly would have has a destination that he'd like it to go.
I think we all try to impress the girl's dad.
Right. Right? Exactly.
You all want the old man to like you.
Yes.
Even if you're not sticking around.
Until a certain point.
Right. Yes.
Shroud of Darkness is the next episode we picked as a highlight. This was a little bit of a soul-searching journey for Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka. They all go back to, for Kanan and Ezra, it's going back to the Jedi Temple on Lothal. For Ahsoka, it's her first time there. And they're kind of just trying to find some answers of where to go next, you know, how they might be able to gain more power. Ahsoka basically has it confirmed for her what she kind of feared to be true, and that would be, I believe anyway that this is where that happens, or at least she has a little bit more confirmation that Anakin, you know, I think she's searching for him there. She's using the temple as a beacon, and she can't quite, you know, she wasn't able to find him, but finding Darth Vader. And I could be describing this completely wrong. I hope that you guys are... Ben, did you watch this one most recently, or no?
No, I did not, but... I think this episode is more about her guilt at not being there for Anakin when the Jedi fell.
Right.
And not so much because, and we'll talk about the finale in a little bit, I'm sure, but that's really when she gets the final confirmation that it is Anakin.
Right. I know that that's when she gets the final confirmation, but I thought that she had
she has an idea now. She gets the idea and she feels really bad she's not there for Anakin when the Jedi fall, which just goes as a testament to her character because they discarded her.
Right. Well, they discarded her, though.
Well, not but Anakin. He didn't do much. Well, I mean, he did a lot to try and free her, but when push came to shove, he was still a Jedi and he let her go.
Yeah.
Kanan seems to achieve the rank of Jedi Knight in this episode.
Sure.
The Grand Inquisitor reveals himself to be a former Jedi, or at least the spirit of the Grand Inquisitor, or whatever, appears to him in this vision at the temple, and grants him the rank of Jedi Knight. I know that Yoda has a connection to this temple. I know that Yoda is seeing them. You know, he's seeing them through the Force. I know that Ezra was gifted. He was granted a lightsaber crystal from this temple, essentially with Yoda's blessing, saying, "A Jedi, you may yet be." But let's be honest here. Do you guys really see this as legitimate?
No. No.
I don't either.
But then again, it is...
But does it have to be? I guess it's the real question.
I don't think it does. I think becoming a Jedi Knight is more... Well, how do you codify it, or what?
It's a title.
The rule structure seems real flexible to when they give Jedi Knight. Is it a ethics thing? Have you finally proven morally you have the fiber to be a Jedi Knight? Can you fight well enough? You know, because just because you made it out alive facing a Sith, maybe you got lucky. Maybe this Sith tripped and fell, which probably wouldn't happen. But just to have it bestowed seems kind of thin.
Well, and the other thing is, the Jedi Order is gone, and the rank of Jedi Knight is really just a... It's kind of a meaningless honorific, really. It's like you're a Jedi Master, you get to sit on the Council. When you're a Padawan, you have to have
A silly rat tail.
Somebody teaching you in a silly rat tail. When you're a Jedi, just a Jedi, you know, when you're a Jedi Knight, what do? Besides just be?
Well, you train others.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jedi Knights take on Padawans.
You have ride-alongs now. Yep.
Right. But he's already doing that. So, and throughout the series, we see that. Where somebody doesn't have the title but has an ability that surpasses people who do have the title. The titles really aren't tied to your ability or anything. I think that was more because Kanan wanted the title than anything else. It doesn't really matter. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. I mean, let's face it. Ahsoka's never more than a Padawan, and she's twice the Jedi Mace Windu ever is.
And if you think about having a title bestowed upon you from an order that's all but gone... Right? I would say the Jedi Order as a structure is no more.
Right.
So that's kind of like somebody from Mississippi granting me the rank of Lieutenant Colonel in the Confederate Army.
Sure.
Today. Well, hurrah. Like, that means absolutely nothing.
You did it!
I'm still going to be the person I was going to be whether you give me a title or not.
Sure.
And no, I don't have any Confederate leanings or mindset.
You better be careful.
I was just trying to find something that people would know about that it is no longer. It doesn't matter.
It's like kind of like the Admiral of the Nebraskan Navy.
Correct.
Which is legitimately a title that you can be granted.
Yeah. Wow.
But Nebraska's landlocked, so it's a completely meaningless title.
Yes.
Hey, but you get to command ships in, like, lakes and streams.
But was the title bestowed upon him to encourage a mindset?
That's what I think.
Was this a greater, like, this is what you... I'm trying to steer you to a potential or trying to give you a direction?
Right. Give you that push to let you know that you are doing a good job.
Yeah.
And right, because he had that mental block where he didn't think he was worthy because he was just a Padawan himself.
The gold star on your spelling test may not really mean anything, but as a child, that gold star felt pretty good.
Right.
Kept you going.
Definitely.
I think maybe this is his gold star.
And Yoda's not beyond manipulating people.
No. And speaking of Yoda...
I clutch my pearls.
He speaks directly with Ezra at the temple. Instead of showing up as a little light cloud and with Frank Oz's voice, it's actually a physical, not physical, it's a vision, but it is Yoda sitting before Ezra. They have a conversation face to face. And Ezra's kind of just looking for an answer of how do we do this? How do we fight? How do I help my friends in the best way? And Yoda kind of gives him a little bit of cryptic advice.
Is that the first time we see a more solid force projection?
Yeah, I think it is.
How come it doesn't kill Yoda?
Well, it's Yoda.
It's Jedi Temple to Jedi Temple, I think. Plus, Yoda's a more powerful force user, but he's also not... There are you comparing it to the Luke thing, right?
I'm just asking if it's the first time we see the use of that power in what is now canon.
I mean, I don't think it's a real projection because I don't think any. I mean,
it's not a light cloud.
So Ahsoka sees Yoda as she's leaving the temple. So obviously, other people can see him. But I guess to compare the situations, they're in a Jedi temple, which is already a naturally more force sensitive place.
Well, whereas Yoda's not.
Hey, let's be realistic about it.
Yoda is in a force site, though. There's a dark cave on the planet. The planet is...
Right.
Right.
Think about it this way. Let's call force projection just, okay, it's a thing. You can learn it, whatever. How old is Luke Skywalker when he fades away with his metal hand?
60-something, probably.
60-something. Yoda's almost 900. So he's just had more time to practice.
Oh, okay.
Maybe he's been, okay, I'm going to see if I can project myself to the tree cave and then over to that hairy vine and maybe to that tree that fell down.
Sure.
I was just wondering if it was the first time in canon we see that ability in action.
I think it is, as
and
a physical
if
form.
If you think, Yoda has saved up almost all of his force abilities, right?
Right.
He hasn't used them for
dick. He's got lots of force points he can cast.
He's got lots of force points he can cast, right, because he wasn't doing anything with them before.
Or sense,
right, right.
And finally, Twilight of the Apprentice, which may, in fact, be like one of the top three Star Wars things ever produced. It's a great episode, visually striking, storyline is incredible. It's incredibly impactful to the saga as a whole. We finally get the clash that we were promised, Darth Vader and Ahsoka.
It pulled on more emotions than I was expecting.
Yeah.
That I was prepared for.
Well, Ben was a slobbering mess.
It was like he was ugly crying. Night. Yeah, yeah.
It was not pretty.
No, but it was I'm not going to say you know, it's not like it came out of nowhere. Oh my gosh, this is actually happening. I think I'm still getting a little goosebumpy now. It was amazing to see on screen. But again, what I was saying with animation style, you could feel what they wanted you to feel with Ahsoka. You could see that she was being crushed by this.
I'm not leaving you this time, Master.
Right.
Then you will die. Right? Mm-hmm. It was like a mixed, you know. I loved that they brought back Matt Lanter to do the voice of Anakin for those two lines or so that he had when the mask was broken and you could hear him a little bit, because obviously that just drives the connection to Clone Wars further.
Right.
Also, I think he's the best Anakin Skywalker by far, because Hayden Christensen's kind of a loser and Jake Lloyd is in a mental institution.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So... yeah, Matt Lanter, the best person to play Anakin Skywalker. Not the best person to play Darth Vader. We haven't even mentioned that James Earl Jones was brought back for Darth Vader's appearances on this show.
Right.
I thought that the way they modulated his voice was a little, just a little different than what they did in the original trilogy.
It was a little different, but with the subtle changes to Vader's suit, over time, I think you would have slight differences in modulation.
Sure, possibly.
And this is me making shit up for the benefit of my imagination in Star Wars.
Sure.
I was going to say I like the fact they had a little bit of a red tinge to the eyes.
Yeah, to match his
Well, the lenses are supposed to be crimson.
Right.
They appeared blacker and blacker and blacker, but originally they were supposed to be crimson lenses.
And they were in A New Hope.
Very.
And right. They were in
Rogue One. Yep.
And it was nice that they were in Rebels as well.
Yeah.
And when the mask was put on in Revenge of the Sith, you could see... At least it appeared to be a crimson screen he was looking through.
Yeah, they was looking through, but the lenses were the mirrored black that we had come to know from Empire and Return.
Right.
Yeah, his suit goes through little changes in every movie, and I think that's more just the costumers had the larger budget to make his costume.
I really would have wished Tony Stark designed his suit instead.
That's right.
I think...
it would have been badass.
It would have been the Empire would have been shaped quite differently
the
if he
Iron
was wearing...
The Iron Sith would have...
If he was wearing a Mark 77 Darth Vader suit.
Blasting out of his hands. Yep. Chest blast.
Unibeam. Come on.
This is a Galactic Network podcast.
We're the Else Nerds.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
For more on this Galactic Network podcast, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.
Let's talk a little bit about our main characters and what they go through in this season. Ezra Bridger, he finds out, this is a major point, so I'm not going in any particular order, but he finds out his parents' fate, ultimately. You know, it was teased in the first season that they might actually be alive, and it turns out they were alive up until he broadcast his message from the tower at the end of season one. They heard that message while they were in prison. They tried to organize a breakout, and they were killed.
So Ezra effectively caused
his effectively caused his parents' death, but at the same time, it was his action of being heroic and trying to help his fellow man and help the planet.
He inspired them.
He inspired them not to die. He inspired them to action, and
he inspired them to try and be free.
Right. And I think
to their death.
It did lead to their death, but it's like I wouldn't blame him in that way.
Well, no, I'd
rather die trying to be free than just die pitifully as a prisoner or a slave somewhere.
I'm bringing that up because I wonder how that weighs on young Ezra Bridger.
He doesn't seem to mention it ever again, so I don't think it weighs on him that much.
Oh, So he's a little bit more shallow than I anticipated.
Well, no, I think
perfect
he's
for a Jedi.
I think he's sad about it initially, but it, you know, it. You're in the middle of a war, essentially. Can you really stop and think about that? I don't know if you can.
Well, and if you are fighting for freedom, as a large portion, can you be that distraught that your parents died trying to be free, which is exactly what you're fighting for? You know, mom and dad didn't die prisoners, slaves, pitiful husks of people. Mom and dad died on their feet.
Right. Now, I do think, however, that their death could have played a part in Ezra's desire for more power. Right?
Sure.
Because pretty much towards the end of the season, when he's asking Yoda for a better way to fight, when he's asking Yoda, I want to protect my friends. You know, this is, it becomes an all-in type of battle for him. And he winds up finding a potential source for that power on Malachor with Darth Maul. Is it surprising or not surprising at all that he was essentially lured, almost lured kind of to the dark side by Maul, even in just a matter of hours?
Well, what I think is very interesting is it's the second time chronologically and the third time overall that we see Yoda specifically not notice somebody having this consuming need to protect, and it drives them to the dark side.
Well, think about it. As a Jedi Knight, right, or a Jedi, you're supposed to protect, unless it's to protect the stuff you want.
Right.
Don't do that. Just protect the stuff we tell you to. All the things you love, go ahead and let them die. Just right. Go ahead and protect what we tell you to protect.
But I just, it's the second time chronologically, the third time in canon thus far,
right,
that we see somebody who is tempted by the dark side in an effort to protect and save people that are important to them that Yoda does not pick up on.
Oh, you mean perhaps love and passion is something they shouldn't ignore?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Seems like
correct.
That's a pretty good place to draw good feelings from.
Right.
Yeah.
No, love leads to suffering. Suffering leads to hate.
No, it's not love. No, love's not a part of that.
Love leads to fear. Fear leads to suffering.
Fear
suffering
leads to anger.
No, no.
Anger leads to hate.
They didn't say love leads to fear. That's not
I know
what
they didn't say love. They didn't say love, but that's the first step every time.
But no, that's not what they said. Love leads to resentment. Resentment leads to hate. Hate leads to divorce. Divorce is the path of the dark side.
There we go. So don't get divorced, kids. Or do. Or I don't know. I don't know what you were trying to recommend there.
Oh, I'm just laying out a roadmap for you.
All right. Darth Maul, we come across him at the end of the season. He plays a larger part in season 3. But he has, at this point, the only thing that's keeping him alive on this desolate planet with nothing else on it has got to be the Force, right? Has got to be his own hatred.
Yeah.
I would like to know what kind of Force power he learned to allow him to eliminate waste.
Well,
he must know, like, force poop.
Yes, force poop.
Force clean.
Force purge.
Yeah.
Force right. purge out of his...
Perhaps he has a force filter.
I'm just wondering.
Well, I don't think he eats. I don't think he eats anymore. Like, when he's on that planet, there's no food to eat.
Through the series, Man, Darth Maul could have been developed into a serious threat and character.
Oh, yeah, he should have been.
And he is... In the Clone Wars and Rebels, if you combine them together,
he could have been. But I'm saying in episodes 1, 2, and 3,
sure,
Maul and Emperor could have been the heavy and the heavy light, if you will, right? And then have this mountain of, my God, it's these two, and what are we ever going to do about it?
But Maul and Vader are on the same planet this one time, right? It's like this... But they don't actually see each other, and they don't actually fight. And that was, I was kind of disappointed.
When they do, when they do.
But Maul does make it clear.
Vader kicks his ass.
He does. In the Dark Horse comics.
In the Dark Horse comics, right. In the Dark Horse, yes. But when he and Ezra are kind of talking about what they want to do, and Maul's like, I'm looking for this power, his enemy is the Sith. His enemies are Vader and the Emperor,
mm-hmm.
and he no longer considers himself a Sith. He's not Darth Maul. He's simply Maul now.
Right.
It is interesting to me that he would choose to go, like, just, he would get rid of the Darth title, but he would keep the name that was given to him, Like, he would keep Maul instead of whatever his name used to be before, which we don't actually know what it was.
Correct.
But
maybe it was Maul.
That would go against every other Sith naming that we've seen.
Maul was a name given to him.
Yeah. I know. I'm just...
Who knows? Maybe it was. His brother's name was Savage Opress.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
Maybe it was Maul
really
Opress.
Digging deep Opress. There. Yeah.
And maybe it just a spelling change. Like, maybe it used to be M-A-L-L, like it was shopping mall.
Maul.
And now it's Maul, like in Big Hammer or Mauled by a Tiger.
Yes. Right. We're making it more scary, Maul.
Right.
Kanan was very resistant to becoming a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He was also very resistant to working with the clones.
Well, of course, he was a Padawan during the Clone Wars.
Right.
Right.
I would think for obvious reasons, because he's been spending the last 15 years of his life trying to conceal his identity from other people.
Well, plus he spent the years before that trying to stop the rebellion.
Oh, trying to stop a rebellion. Not the rebellion, a rebellion. Sure.
The Separatists are... the progenitors of the rebellion.
They are not. It's a totally separate thing, totally separate intentions, also orchestrated by a totally separate being. So, no, they are not the progenitors of the rebellion. But yes.
I think it's just because you don't understand Palpatine's larger plan that you think that. I think the rebellion was perpetrated by
a topic,
Palpatine.
That's a topic for another day. That's a topic for another day.
We would get way off topic if we dove into that.
Right.
But we will. Soon.
Someday. Kanan, yes, he's spending a lot of his time hiding, but now he's kind of thrust into the limelight in this, you know, you guys are both Force users. You're both Jedi, and now you're part of this awesome rebellion. We love to have you. And now it's almost like he's a little bit famous to them, that's kind of the way that I see it. Him and the rest of Phoenix Squadron
think about that thought.
That way.
You're both Force users, Jedi. We'd love to have you, because we really want to return to a day when a sect of priests steal babies from homes. And, like, what? Why do they want to return to that?
I mean, the galaxy was, in theory, in their opinion, was a better place when the Republic and the Jedi were both in power. So
sure.
That's
sure.
what they want to go back
right.
to.
Yep. That okay.
That's
I'll
better
buy
than
that.
That's better than the Emperor.
But
I don't know, and I don't know if they would want the Jedi to return to the same place that they were. But it certainly helps having a Jedi in your
corner. Yeah,
in your
yes.
corner.
Yes, yes. I will take a Force user over not having a Force user. Right.
He does grow stronger in the Force through the season, but at the end of the season, he's dealt a pretty crushing blow. He is blinded.
I'm not sure it's a very crushing blow.
Well, it doesn't... You're right.
I mean, that says something about Kanan's character, that it's not a crushing blow.
Well, initially it is a very crushing blow, because at the beginning of season three, he's pretty much despondent and lost. He spends a lot of his time alone.
But even at this point, that weight hasn't hit him yet. He puts on the face shield, and he still does what he needs to do.
Sure.
Sure.
And, yeah, he's able to find that strength inside, and he's able to not defeat Maul, but, you know, cause Maul to lose his footing and escape that situation.
But I think after that, when he becomes despondent and so forth, perhaps he's starting to wonder, now, what are my limitations?
Right.
Am I ever going to be the person I was supposed to be? Am I ever going to be as powerful as I wanted to be now that I can't physically see what's going on around me?
And I think the argument could be made that actually not being able to physically see what's going on around him helps him to become a much,
sure.
much better,
sure.
you know, Force user, Force wielder than he ever could have been.
I'm not going to lie. I would rather not see Vader coming.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I'd rather die without the piss in my pants, because if I see him coming, that's absolutely what's going to happen.
But that is more of a conversation for season three.
Right.
For season two, I think that Kanan definitely takes some good steps towards being a more well-rounded individual and kind of coming to grips with his role in the rebellion as a whole. And his role as Ezra's teacher.
I'd really like to see this go, I guess, more gray, is what I'm saying, with the Force users not having the strict guidance and the order of the Jedi Code, just be left to find their own middle ground and...
That's kind of what they've done, though.
Right.
And that's kind
right.
of what Ezra and Kanan have done the whole time.
Yeah, I guess, yes, you're right in that, yeah.
So
Even to shed the titles and the honorifics, just yeah, no, that's not me.
As of this recording, you know, we don't know their ultimate fate, but
sure.
I would think that it's kind of seems to be leaning more towards them sort of abandoning the Jedi way. Because right. at that point, you kind of fill the plot hole that there are no Jedi in the original trilogy.
I'm just afraid that at the end they're going to have this, oh, I see the light moment, and yeah, we need to be Jedi. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
They're going to be dead at the end.
Or they die.
Well, no, they're going to be.
I'm fine with that, too.
There's a lot of possibilities. We all thought Ahsoka was what had to die, but she didn't.
I didn't think Ahsoka had to die, but we know that Chopper and Hera lived through this.
Sure. They're just not traveling with them. They could be traveling somewhere else. There could be something that breaks up the group. I'm just saying. Anyway.
Yoko.
Yes. Ahsoka. Speaking of Ahsoka, this was her time to shine in this series. This was her season, basically, to make appearances, because at the end of Twilight of the Apprentice, her fate is uncertain, but I would say there's a pretty good chance that she's dead, right? Am I the only one who thinks that?
Obvious. I mean, if I shake my magic eight ball, it would say signs point to yes. Again, in my imagination in Star Wars, I would hope that, knowing Darth Vader's tried to have secret apprentices before, he would subdue and capture and maybe try to eventually sway.
No, but he's the only one who walks out. We know that for a fact.
We see
him drag his ass out of the rubble, and she's not behind him. He's not dragging her.
No, but he could always come fetch a medical capsule immediately.
I suppose.
Force drag.
And he certainly is the worst for wear coming out of there too.
I mean, his
suit is almost destroyed. You know, he's on death's door. So she obviously gave him a fight. But I think that it undermines the character of Darth Vader if he lets her live.
Here's the thing. I think she's dead. I don't think he killed her.
You think that maybe the destruction of the temple is what killed her?
I think that because this, I just rewatched this morning, as a matter of fact. I think Ahsoka died trying to protect Anakin from the destruction of the temple.
That
like
would be
his one last kick in the ass, because that is in her character completely.
Yes, it is.
And I have a really hard time, even with the "then you die" bravado, I have a really hard time thinking Anakin could just murder Ahsoka like she's a youngling.
Anakin couldn't. Darth Vader can. That's my point. To this point, the idea of the Star Wars mythos is that Anakin Skywalker has spent 15 years thinking back on all the terrible things that he's done and realizing all I can do now is be Darth Vader. And he comes across this piece of his past that is flooding back those memories of, hey, Padme, my wife, unborn child.
If Ahsoka did die trying to save Vader, Vanakin, that would be just...
Vanakin.
You can use that. That would be just more fuel for both Darth Vader and guilt, but also just one more tug on Anakin to come back.
Well, and the thing is, I agree with you that Darth Vader would try and recruit her. Because no matter what point it is, if this is after episode 3, Vader is plotting to kill the Emperor.
Yes.
At some point in time, that is his ultimate goal. And that is easier for him to do with Ahsoka at his side. Now, I don't think Ahsoka would go to the dark side. And I think that would lead to a confrontation between the two. But I think ultimately in that confrontation, I think with the destruction of the temple, that Ahsoka dies trying to save Anakin's life, because that's why she stays.
Right.
And I think that that would be the perfect poetic ending to her arc.
Sure. And you give that huge nudge toward the light saying, nope, Anakin, I know you're in there. And now let's just wait on your baby boy to say, I'm going to cut your hand off, but then we're okay. I won't fight you after that.
Right. Then we're square.
Hera was finally able to share with her friends, with the ghost crew, her plan. You know, here we are. We are finally now with these people that I know, you know, Fulcrum and Bail Organa and all that, you know, all the rest of the rebels. And this is what we've been fighting for. This is what I've been planning. It is a little strange to me that she kind of drags them into it without necessarily their consent.
Why? That's a completely rebel thing to do.
I mean, it is. That's what I'm saying. But
we see that in almost every rebel commander half-ass drags their trusted crew into the rebellion unknowingly.
Slowly gain trust until I can make the big move. But at that point, you're kind of like, well, I'm pot committed.
Right.
At least with this person, I'm pot committed. So, okay, take me along.
But because they know the larger plan, she's able to show more of herself, I think. Because up to this point in season one, you know, you could tell that she was a kind-natured person, that she was kind of the mom of the ship. She looked after people and she had their best intentions in mind. But at the same time, she had this, like, this side of herself that she just wasn't willing to show. And there are parts of the plan that she wasn't willing to tell. But now that there's a little more freedom, I think that she, a lot more of her personality and even her personal business with them going to Ryloth to deal with her father. You know, it all kind of comes out in the wash that there's more to her than maybe any of them could have realized.
Sure, her cards aren't so close to her vest now.
Sure.
Now you can, now that you see the bigger picture, I'm going to let you know the bigger picture with me too.
And she also gets to show off her skills with that B-wing to fly through the clouds and earn the trust of the guy who built it, which we all probably figured that she would. But it was just cool to see her get that moment to shine.
Yeah, we've all played video games. We know how that quest works.
That's right. Ben, any thoughts on Hera?
I like Hera as a character because aside from Hera, we've seen, what, three real Twi'leks during the rest of canon?
Ula.
Ula, Bib.
Bib Fortuna.
And Ayla Secura.
Yeah.
And so now we see one that's not a force sensitive, not a whore, and
well,
not a consigliere.
There was also the Twi'lek that the clone got married to.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And they had like their hybrid
the kids.
Children. Right.
Okay. So this is the fourth. So deserter spouse, dancing whore. Consigliere.
Dancing slave.
Yeah, dancing slave.
She
please.
Didn't choose that.
Well, not everybody who's a whore chooses to be a whore.
Right.
Also, aren't you only a whore if you get paid?
She got paid in food.
No, but she's... No, that's Reuben not being
board.
Paid. That's not
Reuben
being paid.
Board.
She's gotten paid by being left alive.
Being a sex slave and being a whore are two different things.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
One is for profit. One is for survival.
Sure.
And being paid is not paid in survival.
I didn't think this was something we'd ever talk about on this show.
If Job is the person doing the owning, I don't necessarily know survival is in the cards.
Oh, yes, right.
And it wasn't for her. But I, yeah.
So, not through Jabba's fault, though.
Oh, and Cham. Because Cham is a...
Oh, yeah, and Cham.
And all of his friends. Anyway,
but anyway,
I
we
get
to
point.
See
get
an
point.
Actual multi-dimensional Twi'lek. Which is
I
nice.
I guess I just assumed they existed. I didn't need it to be proven to
well,
me.
Well, no, but Star Wars, and we've referred to Star Wars racist a lot on the show because it exists. But every race seems to be typecast in a role in the Star Wars universe. And it was really nice to see such an iconic race become such a well-developed character.
Sure.
Speaking of races, Ben, I know you wanted to talk a lot about the Lasat, and we're going to talk a little bit about Zeb now and his character development in this season, which we haven't really up to this point.
Well, the first reason that I love the Lasat is their character model is actually based off the original concept sketches for Chewbacca.
Right.
Right.
Which is pretty awesome. And they come up with a really... interesting culture for the Lasat that involves non-forcey magic. And kind
well,
of
it is the Force. They just
well,
call it
has
something
to be
different.
The Force
right,
because
right.
It's Star Wars and all magic is the Force. But
the nice thing is if you don't call it the Force, you're not limited to what you can and can't do with it. Yeah.
Instead, they call it the Ashla and the Bogan.
I was going to say they do have the ancient names of it. That they share the ancient names of the light and dark side, but it's really interesting. This and Zeb is an interesting character because he's a very honorable warrior, a member of the honor guard of whatever the fuck planet they were from.
Lassan.
Lassan. Who failed. And so he's an honorable person whose honor is heavily tarnished.
Right.
And
not stripped, but
well, and he blackened. Can't ever reclaim it.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, he can't reclaim the lost honor. He can have new honor, but like he's not going to be able to reclaim Lassan. He's not going to be able to avenge his falling there.
But he doesn't. I think it's this season that is probably the biggest stroke of his actual development, because in season three and what we've seen to this recording so far of season four, he's really not a focus point. You know, they kind of let him be, he's there, he's him, but they don't really develop him. So this season's the most meat that Zeb gets. And we see it when he helps his people get back to the new planet that they're going to call their home. Through the black
hole.
Which
is actually their original home.
Their original homeworld. And he sort of pulls a Luke Skywalker and proves that he's the bigger man when he works together with Agent Kallus to survive, despite their history, because right. Kallus was a part of the invasion of Lassan.
Right.
And we know that they've had, obviously, there's a huge, it's like a blood feud between them up to that point. So the fact that they are able to, that Zeb is the person, it's not like Zeb is hurt and Kallus is the one upright. Zeb is upright. But he could take the strike and he could kill Kallus now, but he chooses not to because he's letting that go.
Well, and ultimately that's probably what brings, and I know I'm jumping ahead to a little bit of season three here, but ultimately I think Zeb's actions in that episode help bring Kallus to the point where he becomes a new fulcrum.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Because sure. when Kallus goes back, because I think that the Ghost crew even, like, I think he's actually on board the Ghost for like a short time, and they drop him off somewhere and then leave. No, he's not. That's right.
He stays behind.
He stays
behind
to wait for the Empire to come and get him. But the compassion that Zeb showed him, and like the familial nature of like, the crew is coming back to get me. I think that the Empire, he like trusted the Empire would come to try and find him, but they didn't.
Well,
right?
They treat him like shit when he gets back.
And when he gets back, he goes back to his quarters,
well,
which are this.
That's finding out the propaganda
situation.
Wasn't real.
Right.
Right. That's all that was. He got to see the face or the heart of the enemy, and he realized that maybe they're not all clawed, vicious people who just want to kill everything I love.
Well, and we also find out from Kallus, because they've got that, I don't know what the Lassat magic stick is called, but that Lassat item, we learn early on that Kallus is carrying it, and it's a really big sticking point for Zeb.
Oh, you're talking about the bow rifle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zeb believes that Kallus murdered a Lassat honor guard and took it. And we find out in this episode that that's not what happened. He defeated the honor guard in honorable combat, and the Lassat granted him that weapon as a symbol of his honor as a warrior, which it changes Kallus' character in a big way, because before that, and he doesn't do anything to dissuade us from believing that he murdered somebody and stole the weapon. There's nothing that...
In fact, he almost makes it outwardly seem that way.
Right, like he's taunting Zeb with it.
Yeah, when he chides Zeb about it in the first season.
But you always
want to appear more dangerous.
Right.
Right, especially if you're unsure of the people or the surroundings. You want them to think that I'm a cold-blooded killer and you could be next.
But I find it interesting that Kallus at that point, the facade is dropped from the Empire, but we learn that he had a facade up the whole time too.
And finally, Sabine. It's kind of almost the opposite, where Zeb had a lot of growth in this season and doesn't really have it going forward. Sabine has a little bit of growth in this season, but has way more going forward, especially in season three. But Sabine in season two, I would say the biggest point for her is when she comes across an old friend of hers, Ketsu, who is also a Mandalorian, but has chosen to become a bounty hunter. And
unlike other Mandalorian bounty hunters we see, she appears to be effective.
She appears to be competent.
But these are the Mandalorians
who deserve all of her equipment.
Right, yes. Right.
But we, you know, she winds up She knows this person, you know, she's a friend of hers from the past, but they've gone in two very different directions. So I think that it's almost like looking in a mirror of almost confirming to herself, because I can understand, like I brought up with Hera kind of dragged them into this fight.
Right.
And I don't know how much of a choice they really felt like they had, but I think that when Sabine took a look at Ketsu and realized that that's a possibility, she was turned off by it. She was repulsed by it. She didn't want that to be the way that she lived her life. And I think she kind of strengthens herself in her own resolve after that meeting.
Doing. Yeah,
sure. And I also think that it could have planted the seeds for what we see later on with her taking a bigger role in helping her people get back on their feet.
Well, and the argument of not having their own choice to join or not join is always, well, you could have left anytime you wanted.
Sure.
Well, not really. Not after I've made friends and have emotional ties to you.
Right.
Yeah, I could have left anytime I wanted if I was an unfeeling dick.
Exactly.
You know? But, you know, I care about things and you're one of them. So, no, I'm not going to leave. But let's talk about this first, right?
Right. But if I am going to leave, it's going to be to go to a swamp on Dagobah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I'm an unfeeling dick.
Oh. You know, Ben, you're really getting my ire up. I feel like that might have to be our next episode.
Well, that would probably be a good thing, because I have no shortage of shitty things to say about Yoda.
Oh, man.
Hey, when things get tough, the green run away.
Absolutely. But they don't run. They run away with a purpose. All right.
And that purpose is to hide like a bitch until an orphan comes along to save the day.
Happens to come along.
Does anybody?
Wait, next episode. Next episode.
Does anybody?
There wasn't even a trail of breadcrumbs, brother. Nothing. I mean, there was nothing to let anybody know this is where he is.
There was Obi-Wan.
Yeah, but while he was alive, this dick didn't say anything about it.
And R2.
No, R2 doesn't know.
Yes, R2 does. R2 took him to Dagobah the first time.
To Dagobah the first time, and not the second time.
Well, yeah, but he could have wrote down a list of places he would, maybe.
R2 knows everything.
Yeah.
R2 doesn't know that he's on Dagobah the second time. Anyway, do you guys have anything else to say about Rebels Season 2 that we haven't said already?
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, this is probably the best season of the show so far. I feel like it has enough of a mix. I mean, we didn't even talk about, like, you know, Leia appears in this season.
Sure.
She has a Louise. See her as a teenager, you know, kind of organizing her part of the fight. It also makes it extremely apparent that Darth Vader has every right to believe that. Besides, even if you don't count Rogue One, even if you take that out of the equation and, like, that he saw her ship, like, escape.
They tracked the ship. Not with his eyes.
With his eyeballs.
Yes, with his eyeballs. The fact of the matter is that she had been pulling strings kind of a little carelessly that she probably shouldn't have been pulling, and it probably drew the attention of a lot of
someone else who apparently has the ability to mask her force presence.
Well, she doesn't really have it.
If you're totally ignorant to it.
Right.
Right.
You're undeveloped. It's not like she's using her power.
Well, there were not yet. She gets to be Mary Poppins later.
Eventually, yeah. If it's revealed to you that you can use the Force and someone helps you and trains you to use the Force, then yeah, sure, you have the power.
No, you don't need somebody to reveal to you that you have the ability to use the Force.
That's great.
You can just spontaneously mind trick people without any training.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. As we've seen on film, yes, you can. And I think that's going to wrap up today's episode. Matt? It's been a pleasure.
Also.
You know what? Would you like to... All right. So you seem to have a lot to say about Palpatine and Yoda. You're just throwing some shade.
I have mountains of things to say about Palpatine.
So I think that our next episode, we should... Both of these guys are very... They're at the top of their orders, right? They're kind of mirror figures in themselves. So I think we should tackle them both. At the same time.
Makes sense. Talk about the successes of Palpatine and the failings of Yoda.
In our first double profile. What do you think, Ben?
Let's do it.
Okay. And Matt, you can come back.
Completely on
How
board.
About that? I'm okay with it. After next episode, I might not be okay with it. We'll find out. because things could get contentious. But that's what makes it fun. You can follow us on the Galactic Network, gncasts.com. You can follow us on Spreaker, our original home with our archive of episodes there. We did a film commentary of A New Hope. We should do that again.
We should. Let's do a film commentary of The Last Jedi when it comes out. I would love that.
Perhaps we could. Maybe your hatred of the film will lessen.
I'm not above begging to be part of that.
Hey, Eric was a part of our New Hope commentary. So.
When it happens, I will let you know.
We need three shadows for a proper film commentary.
Yes, we'll figure it out. Perhaps we'll do that. Matt, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
And Ben, may the Force be with you.
Back at you, Zach.
Wow.
Well, I had to change it up. He took my "and also with you."
No, I stepped on it intentionally.
You can't do that. You can't. No, that's not how this works. So I'm going to say it again. Ben, may the Force be with you.
Just making him wait.
If you don't say it, I'm going to edit it in.
And also with you, Zach.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.